Welcome to the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete Podcast, where we talk strength training, science, and all things performance for cyclists and triathletes, helping you be a stronger, more savvy athlete now and for many years to come. Here's your host, Menachem Brody.
Hey everybody, and welcome to episode 183 of the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete Podcast. This short episode, we're going to talk about what matters in developing strength for endurance athletes. Now, there have now been a number of different individuals out there who have begun to share what they think is developing strength in endurance athletes. And I saw just a short time ago a fantastic interview with Eric Cressy. So for those who don't know, Eric Cressy is pretty much the driving force behind the changes in the strength and conditioning approaches for professional and developmental baseball players over the last 10 or 15 years. So I've followed Eric from the early to mid-2000s when he was writing for T-Nation. He was also someone that I followed alongside Mike Robertson and Tony Gentlecourt, whom you have heard here a number of times on the podcast. And really, it comes down to understanding what is actually needed for sports performance. Now, Eric is the director, I believe, of strength for sport performance, I think, for the New York Yankees. Boo. We'll forgive that last part, the team he's working for. But he's doing some really important work. And in his most recent interview that he did, and I'll see if I can find the name of the podcast for you guys, the Diggin' Deep podcast. He talks about how it's really easy to make athletes strong, and anybody can do that. And that is literally what we have been talking about here in the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete podcast, as well as the certification course. It's that anybody can make you strong. It's not that hard to do that. There is tons of information out there, and pretty much going into a gym and just adding a little bit of weight each week. Start with something light, and over the course of the next couple of weeks, add 1.5 to 2 pounds each week and do the same number of reps and keep going for a couple of weeks until you run out of the ability to do it. Now, most people follow that will actually see really nice progress for about a year. But are you actually making the athlete strong in a way that will allow them to perform? And that's what matters in developing strength for endurance athletes, is getting somebody to the point where they are layering strength on good, well, actually great movement patterns. And Eric says that in this little quote. I actually shared it on the Instagram page as well. Unfortunately, sometimes you're learning strength on bad patterns and you're selling out for it, which essentially, and he goes on to talk about baseball, how it's only 5 ounces. And there are a number of players who are extremely strong, and certainly they're not squatting 500 pounds to perform that way. Well, the same thing can and should be said about cyclists and triathletes. And this is something that is drastically or grossly miscalculated in what we are seeing produced right now. I've seen a number of articles, a number of courses as well, which I was extremely disappointed, where they essentially said, oh, getting stronger is easier. And they give you a mainstream fitness way to gain strength, which is great. You will gain gym strength, but it doesn't actually translate to performance. And this is something we need to be extremely wary about as a community for two reasons. Number one, most cyclists and their coaches are already biased against strength training. Now, we've seen the research come out and the numbers are starting to show that you need to lift heavy stuff. And this is where there was actually a really great post by a really highly experienced coach named Vernon Gambetta. And he, if you don't follow him on Facebook, I would strongly recommend you do so. Vern's been a coach, and I really mean a master of the game rather than just a coach, for I think over 50 years at this point. He's worked in baseball. He worked with the Chicago White Sox in the 90s when a gentleman named Frank Thomas was playing there. And I think that Vern has some of the best perspective. You have also heard of from him here on the podcast, so I'd recommend going back and listening to that episode. But let me just read you a quote, or read you the post that he put up a couple days ago on sports science and perspective. Most sports science studies are isolated studies out of context of the spectrum of human movement demands. Science needs to measure an isolated component to conduct quote-unquote valid, end quote, scientific experiments. I understand that those are the rules of the game for scientists, but outside the lab, in the real world of performance, the rules are different. On the field or in the pool, we cannot isolate variables. Does that mean we should reject science and rely solely on practice and experience? Absolutely not. As coaches, we need to travel in both worlds. As a coach, statistical significance does not mean anything to me. I am interested in coaching significance and how it applies to making a particular exercise or training method more effective. The great coaches I have known are both artists and scientists. They know what canvas to paint on, what brushes to select, the brush strokes to use, and how to blend the colors to achieve the results they desire. We must get, emphasis is mine, we must get all the pieces working in harmony. In performance, the essence is linkage and connections, not isolation. Therefore, the training should reflect this and focus on muscle synergies and connections. So any emphasis was mine. You can actually read that. It's on his Facebook page. It's very open. He's always open to conversations there. And there's a number of people who have commented on here as well. And this is essentially what we are missing these days, is a combination of both what Eric Cressy is saying and Vern Gambetta is saying. And these are things that you have heard if you are a subscriber here to the Strong Savvy Cyclist podcast over the last 6 years. Holy cow, 2018 we started this, man. Over the last 6 years, you have heard these messages over and over again, where it's not about just making somebody stronger. It is about making them stronger in the right way, postures, positions, 2019, so 5 years. So it really comes down to, over the last 5 years since we started this podcast, in a hotel room, going on to GCN to fix Hank's push-ups, to we are still seeing people thinking that stronger is stronger. And case in point, Hank, who I helped fix his push-ups, and he banged out, I think, 24 or 25 before we stopped him with just a simple correction of how he was positioning himself and how he was putting force into the ground and tension into the ground. That's literally all I did. There was no pre-cueing or didn't meet him beforehand for an assessment or anything. He went on and did a 22-minute special on strength training in a gym with, ta-da, one of the top bodybuilders in the UK. Can we get any more further from performance for cycling? And this is where I really, in my estimation right now, and the feedback that I'm getting for the most part on my latest book, Strength Lift Heavy Shit, I can't remember the subtitle, Intelligent Strength Training for Masters Cyclists. That book, the feedback overall has been overwhelmingly positive. However, the few negatives that I've seen, both in the reviews on Amazon as well as private emails, is folks who just are missing it. You know, someone said something along the lines of pretty much the book is, you need to not think about gym strength. You need to think about how it ties into your biking. Lifts an RPE of 7 out of 10, and that's it. There are so many more details than that. That is not it in a nutshell. Like, in a nutshell, it is meet yourself where you are. Make sure that you have recoverability. No strength session should bury you. You should be looking at the improvement of the postures and positions. You should be able to take your strength training and develop the breathing habits to be able to recover faster on the bike and off the bike. You should be training movements that are not just like the bike, but also rotational movements in a way that are spine safe and spine friendly, as well as there are certain ways that you are able to load heavy weights and actually lift really heavy shit. But it comes down to how you're programming them in and how you're progressing it to them over the course of years, not months. And this kind of is showing me there are some folks who have paid attention to what the best out there are doing. So the strength training for performance is nothing new. This I'm not creating anything new. I'm literally standing on the shoulders of giants that came before me, Vern Gambetta being one of them. You know, I didn't follow him that closely until one of my athletes who had worked with him when she was much younger. I think she was in her 50s when I worked with her, and she worked with him when she was in college. So what, 20 years, 30 years, introduced me to him. And I was like, man, why did I not know this guy? He's got a great podcast, by the way, called the Gain Podcast, G-A-I-N. And he holds a summer session where coaches go to actually learn. It's not this huge up on stage thing. It is actually conversations and hands-on coaching. I had actually been scheduled to go in 2020, but we all know how that worked out. So what I'm trying to get at, and you'll notice I'm going off script a little bit, what I'm trying to get at here is that sports performance, well, sports science is doing a better job of giving us glimpses into what specifics are. The sports scientists are not actually telling us how performance is developed or made. They are simply saying that, hey, everybody, we were wrong about weight training. If you actually lift heavy things, it can help you. Your nervous system becomes better at recruiting these muscles, and you learn how to create stiffness, although they haven't said that yet. If you do this heavy stuff, you're going to see some great results over 4 to 8 weeks. Well, therein lies the problem. And I this was part of my, I don't know how well received it was. I hope it was well received. That was part of my keynote speech at the 2023 Science and Cycling Conference, was we're on the wrong train. And I said, I don't envy you guys. You have a really hard job. You have to isolate these things in order for it to be valid, but we're on the wrong train. It's not about heavy strength training. And in fact, the last slide that I had actually had suggestions from my experience and from talking to others in preparation for that presentation, two researchers, top researchers in the world. I mean, I'm not name dropping because that's not the type of personality I am, but these are people that I grew up reading. And I was like, holy cow, man, I can't believe I am sitting up here and I'm talking to them. What the heck is going on? And really what it comes down to is there's a number of things that we need to look at instead. So the possible stations on the road ahead, it was the last slide before my information slide. There's an evolution that has to happen. Research studies looking at performance programs. Look at the use of tempo, velocity-based movements and lifting and their effects on riding efficiency and economy. Explore the increases in efficiency and economy after a performance-oriented strength program. Explore recovery-boosting abilities of strength for performance. Posture and breathing focus, deeper exploration of the fascial system, and changing from a lens of strength competing with riding to a lens of strength complementing riding. And I had these great GIFs and short movies from Wallace and Gromit, because they have that fantastic kids movie from the 90s, The Wrong Trousers. And that was the theme of, I wanted to make it funny, right? Because who am I to stand up there, or who am I to be behind this microphone and tell you that what matters in developing strength for endurance athletes is postures and positions and getting you to be able to move better, not just getting you to be able to lift heavier stuff, right? It's a developmental thing. If you show up and you lift at an RPE of 7 on average most days, that doesn't mean that in the book Lift Heavy Shit I'm saying only RPE 7. I talk about the max strength phase where you are lifting at an RPE of 8 and sometimes 9. You're moving heavy stuff. We don't need to go heavier than that, because you're going to get the adaptations you need without the high risk that comes from an RPE of 9. And I've felt this myself. I went through a heavy deadlift block. I love deadlifts. I love heavy deadlifts, and I love velocity-based training for deadlifts. I love it. That's something that I've gotten back into with my coach recently. And one of the things that I realized is, because of the time that I'm spending on the bike, the tissues that I need to be stiff in my lower back, hips, and pelvis are not as stiff as they need to be. And it took me like a good 3 or 4 days to really recover after the heavy deadlift session we had each week. We had one a week. That's one of the other things that matters in developing strength for endurance athletes, is the tissue qualities and how much you're exposing them to this. So Brian Carroll and I had a great conversation about this two or three episodes ago. I think it was episode 180. And for those who don't know, Brian was the record holder for a number of years for the squat, 1,306 pounds that he did. So this was back, it was episode 178. So it was four episodes ago. From December of 2023. And he said, you know, what tissues are you trying to involve? What are you trying to do with them? Why? What kind of heavy deadlifting? Tell me more about this athlete. That's the level we have to begin to think when it comes to developing strength for endurance athletes. And the thing is, these are frankly conversations that are not happening. They're not happening. People are just going, well, yeah, I get it. You need to lift year-round to RPE of 7 and keep going with it. Or, yeah, you don't really need to lift heavy stuff. It needs to be throughout the year. You're missing the point, guys. Developing strength for endurance athletics, it goes counterintuitive to what a lot of people think. And that is during the winter, we're lifting heavy stuff. No. The winter, you're doing base miles, man. You're doing a lot of miles. If you're a standard master's athlete, you're stuck on the indoor trainer for 8 to 14 hours a week. You're slaving away. You're putting in the intensity. We don't need to lift heavy stuff then necessarily. We need to build up the properties. We need to build the tissues. We need to build the positions after being on the bike for a year. The heavy stuff comes like now. February, March, April, going into May, and then through the season. I've got professional riders that we've gone into a gym in July and they message me like, I'm getting stares because I'm putting heavy weights on and people think I'm doing it wrong. Right? We've heard from Zoe Backstedt and her coach as well here on the podcast before, where you know Chris is Peden is talking about the type of stuff he's doing with her. And it's a matter of finding what works for the rider and developing them as an athlete. And that's what building top sport is. And people just don't understand that. And that's why top sport is so difficult. When you are actually working for long-term endurance and improve capabilities on the bike, the strength training, number one, needs to be year-round. Number two, it needs to be consistent. Number three, it needs to be in a way that is going to help the athlete be able to recover and return to the bike and kick ass again. And oftentimes what that means is what I call in the book, Strength Training for Cycling Performance, High Performance Recovery Training. Now, why that short chapter has gone over people's heads is beyond me. I have the book here on the shelf. The fact that more people aren't flagging that and asking deeper questions, and I'm not saying this because I have all the answers. I don't. I have, for every question I ask, I have like 15 or 20 questions more. Why did it work for that athlete? Why didn't it work for this other athlete? They're about the same age. They're putting out roughly the same amount of mileage. They're doing the same type of work. They're under the same coach. Why did one, it worked really well, the other one not so much? Well, that's top sport. But when we put the high performance recovery training together, for both of them it worked. But for one of them, it needed to be a little bit more elastic based. We need to get a little bit more jumpy and springy, whereas the other one did much better with heavy deadlifts. Like, we can lift heavy stuff or we can lift medium heavy stuff fast. Both of them are going to give you a high performance recovery training ability. But why aren't people asking these types of questions? It's because we all have this idea, and this is really what it comes down to as the top thing for developing strength for endurance athletes. We all tend to think we have it figured out. Read the book, watch the movie, watch the biography, whatever it may be, watch the documentary. Yeah, I got it. That's not how you actually develop it. It's going back and reading the book. I've got three books here, four books that are falling apart, that are highlighted, green, yellow, orange, blue, written in the margins. I had to buy the new copies or the updated versions because I had a feeling like, it's not really vibing with what I'm seeing. And I've also seen a little bit of the evidence-based research coming out that makes me wonder about this. And then, boom, there you go. The author comes out with an updated version of it. These are the types of things that we need to be looking at as coaches. It's not just reading the book, it's going back and trying things. Read it. Read it again. Read a segment of it again. Read a chapter of it again. Go through it again. You are not the same coach after having finished a book than the one you were when you started it. Now try something from the book. Come back. Try it again. Reread it. Oh, I didn't notice that before. Some of my favorite books to go through are Dan John's because they're so... The first time I read Dan John, I got to tell you guys, man, I did not appreciate the wisdom that was in it. I was like, man, this is so simple and straightforward and too easy. And it sat on my Kindle for about 3 years until I sprained my ankle, was stuck inside and couldn't work. I was instructing group classes at CrossFit. Yes, that's right. I worked in CrossFit. I worked with athletes at high level in CrossFit as well, top two in the nation. And I read it because I wanted something that was light and easy and fitness related. And when I read it that time, after having coached group fitness for 3 years, as opposed to personal coaching or working with the cycling or basketball team, man, I was virtually dog-earing the pages. I have so many notes. I think I highlighted something like 340 passages in that book. And the wisdom did not occur to me until the third time I read it. That's right. The first time, yeah, it's too simple. I'm not really sure about this. Like, yeah, it makes sense, but okay, cool. It needs to be more complex than that. Second time was, I'm bored. I need something light and easy to digest. And then, oh, wow. The third time was, I get it. I get what he's talking about. Huh. Man, I got to go pick up the, Cal Dietz book. Man, I'm not sure about that. Let me pick up the McGill book. Oh, this is good. Let me get deeper into this. All right, man. Oh, I read this before. What was I thinking? Oh, here's my note on the side. Wow. Man, I thought I was past that, but that's so true. That's where developing the strength comes from, is going back through reading your notes. And I feel like these days with the electronic books, almost nobody goes back and reads the notes that they take. And almost nobody takes notes with books. Why would I stop reading when I can see the percentage go from 25 to 27 if I read for 10 more minutes and I can just put a note in later? I'll just read it later. I just want to get down a little bit further. And it just, at least for me. Now, some of you may say, actually, reading digitally slows me down. It makes it easier for my notes because I don't have a separate notebook, or I don't have this, or I don't have that. I'm just sharing with you guys my experience. That's all. So as you can tell here, I've gone quite a bit off script the last 2 or 3 minutes, but really it comes down to this. It's not reading a book. It's reading and rereading a book. Now, I'm not one to continue reading a book just because it's supposed to be good. If I get 2 or 3 chapters into a book, and of course, depending on how long the chapters are, if I'm not feeling it, I just move on. I mean, you can ask my wife, man. You can ask my wife. She always asks, what do you want for birthday present? Another bookshelf? We're not getting another bookshelf. Use your Kindle. The number of books I have on my Kindle that are 37% read or 62% read, if I get to a certain point in a book and I'm like, man, I'm just not finding anything that's really striking right now, I don't return it. I don't get rid of it. I keep it. I bought it for a reason. I think I've actually only returned 2 books on Kindle, and both of them were like very clearly funnel books where they didn't actually have content. Instead, they were just leading you to buy from the reader. I won't mention them by name. That's not the type of gig I run. But there's a number that I've read and reread. So Moonwalking with Einstein by Joshua Foer, which is about memory, is one that I've read and reread a couple times. That's back at the top. There's a couple others here. Let's see. Problem Solver by Cheryl Strauss Einhorn. That's the second or third time that I've read through it. Fat Loss Happens on Monday, third or fourth time. Never Let Go, Dan John. See, there you go. Probably the sixth time I read that. Let's see. There's a couple others here. There's some investing books. The Baby Steps, Dave Ramsey. Read that probably 17 times at this point. Not 17, like 7. Here's another one. The Revolutionary 1x20 RM Strength Program by Michael Yeses. That is another book that I read, started reading through it, and I was like, man, this seems like a bunch of hooey. I don't think this is anything. Came back to it probably 3 or 4 years later. I don't know what the exact purchase date was. And I was like, man, this actually seems really interesting. I can do this with some of my basketball guys. Man, I got to tell you, those guys were freaking flying, right? It's a time and a place. So that's where you've got to come back, read, reread. Now, to get back onto the track and to wrap things up for this shorter episode, what matters in developing strength for endurance athletes? Number one is developing your mind map. as Charlie Munger is famous for having said, invert. Always invert, meaning what is the opposite? So if you think you've got something figured out, Google the opposite and see if somebody's found some success with it. Now, sometimes you're going to get into some conspiracy theory kind of crazy stuff, but it's still a perspective and there might be something there. That something might be somebody crazy who thinks that eating raw liver and raw meat actually made that dude ripped as he was when it was really about $6,000 worth of performance-enhancing drugs every week. But, you know, you got to just use the best you can with perspective. And that is where number two, have others who are further along the journey that one, agree with you, two, disagree with you, and three, have tried a whole bunch of stuff and have seen success, and talk to them. Get their perspective. Now, I don't talk to a lot of the guests regularly. That's not really my personality. But there are times where I've got questions. I should ask Tony that. Or I wonder what Mike thinks about this. Right? This is where developing your network and having good coaches around you is really priceless. And the third thing is, what really matters in developing strength for endurance athletes is continuity and curiosity. And that's where having a coach is so important. And the way I look at it, I've been through four or five coaches at this point. This is my fourth strength coach in my entire life. I'm a long haul guy. I think that one of the challenges we have with ready-made training plans on Train Heroic or Training Peaks is it's really easy to hop around and not get into the weeds and really understand what someone's doing. Stick with a coach, a strength coach, for 2 to 4 years. A good one. Can be a personal trainer. Some people have a different certificate, but they are very much strength coaches. And I've seen a number of those. I'm like, man, the person you're working with, your personal trainer is a strength coach. They ain't a personal trainer. They get it. They are coaching you. They are teaching you how to do stuff. They're not just giving you a workout. You're developing. Don't work with me. Continue with them. I've literally said that on a sales call the other day. It's like, you don't need me. You need the trainer that you have right now because he's doing a great job. So keep with them. If you have questions or you want another perspective, I'm happy to be here and to help with you guys and to give my 2 cents. But that doesn't mean you need to follow it or should. Right? These are the types of people you want to surround yourself with, people who are thinking long term. Now, that doesn't mean, oh, you got to lose 5 pounds. Let's see what we can do over the next 5 years. Right? You want results. Alwin Cosgrove's gym out of California is called Results Fitness because he gets results, whether you're a ninja warrior competitor or you're looking to lose 20 pounds or you're over the age of 60 and want to get back in shape after playing college basketball and not doing anything for the last 30 years. You've got to find other people around you to learn from, to follow, or just to have right programs. Like my coach, I literally wrote him this 2 weeks ago for my new program. I was like, man, I cannot put together my circuit. Man, I'm just so fried. I literally do this all day, every day, but I just can't put one for myself. I'm stuck. Do I do this? Do I do that? Just give me something new, man. Don't leave it up to me. These are the types of people you want to surround yourself with and always keep learning. Now, I will say, and I harped on this for some time on today's podcast, going back through and rereading books has been one of the most fundamental things that I have found to my progress. I have a number of courses sitting here that I haven't even started. I have a number that I've gotten halfway through and I got what I needed to explore to see results for my athletes and I've stopped. Does it bother me that when I log in, the window is still open and I'm only 17% through the course? Yeah. You betcha. It sure does. But I got what I needed out of that course to that point to seriously help those that I'm working with. And there's nothing wrong with not moving further until you are ready. There's nothing, you get a certificate at the end. Great, congratulations. If you need CEUs to keep your certification current, yeah, blow through that course, but make sure you come back because most people don't. But the courses that I have, I've come back a number of times to. I watch, rewatch. Some of them I've forgotten. I go back, I'm like, man, I have a list of them. And I'm like, when did I look at that one last? Oh, what does the spreadsheet say? April of 2019, right after it came out. I should probably go back and watch that one. And holy cow, man, this is gold. Why did I forget about this? Going back, just because it's new doesn't mean it's any better. And in fact, these days with TikTok and Instagram and Facebook fitness, the fact of the matter is, most of the stuff out there is complete and utter bull. And that's why the episode previous to this one, 182, was understanding the landscape and social media fitness. Because most of the stuff out there is just stupid complex, or people who are working with top-level athletes. We're talking people who are gifted and can do crazy stuff, but that doesn't actually help you. It looks really impressive and it sounds really impressive, but it doesn't check the box for you. It doesn't make you 1% better. So with that, we're going to wrap up for this week's episode, or I should say this month's episode. Questions, comments, concerns, email me. Brody, B as in boy, R-O-D as in dog, I-E at humanvortextraining.com. If you have not already liked and subscribed, I would appreciate it if you did. And if you found this episode to be useful, helpful, or got you thinking, please hit the subscribe button and share it with three other people you know or think would benefit from it. I am looking to grow the podcast here in 2024. I know I'm going to be doing fewer podcast episodes just because life has happened in a good way, in awesome way. But even if I was posting every week, I want quality content. I don't want numbers just because. But your sharing this episode or another episode that you found useful with three other people will help grow this podcast and help more people begin to critically think what matters in developing strength for endurance athletes and how do I better do a better job for myself or my athletes. Thank you guys for your ears and attention. I'm looking forward to seeing you in the month of May.
That's it for this episode. Check out humanvortextraining.com for more great content and to keep learning.